You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, it's Food Friday, and we'll find out how to use the ordinary ingredients on your kitchen shelf to create delicious home-cooked meals. First, we've made peace with a number of apex predators like polar bears and bald eagles and jaguars, but for some reason, it's hard to get people to rally behind the timber rattlesnake. That's according to our next guest, who says the snakes deserve our protection both for their unique role in the American ecosystems of today and also throughout history, and for being the remarkable creatures that he says that they are. Timber rattlesnakes are found in 31 states within range of many urban areas, including La Crosse and Madison, and in general along the rocky areas of the Mississippi River. But although we live alongside timber rattlesnakes, we don't tend to know a lot about them. Ted Levin is here to help change that. He's a self-employed nature writer who's worked for the National Audubon Society, the National Park Service, and the Bronx Zoo. And he's the author of America's Snake, The Rise and Fall of the Timber Rattlesnake. Ted, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you, Veronica. I'm happy to be here.
I have to say, I've never read anybody write with so much love about a snake as you do in America's Snake. How did you first fall in love with timber rattlesnakes?
Well, I grew up on the coast of Long Island, and I used to catch little brown snakes and water snakes and garter snakes as a kid. And my mom and dad, I had the good fortune that my mom and dad took me to the Staten Island Zoo when I was growing up. And the curator of herpetology at the Staten Island Zoo, Carl Kaufeld, was a rattlesnake aficionado, and he displayed every species and subspecies of rattlesnake found in the United States. And so that's where I first was introduced to timber rattlesnakes.
And one of the surprising things that you write about them is how little protection they seem to have. And you compare the snake enthusiast, for instance, with the bird watcher. The bird watcher will see a bird and move on. But the snake enthusiast, you say, tends to collect the snake and take it home with him. How common is that?
Well, it's common enough that it has threatened timber rattlesnake populations that are fairly close to urban areas. For example, there was a man, now deceased, named Rudy Komarek, who, by his own admissions, collected more than 9,000 rattlesnakes. So some people deny that he collected that much, but he would collect them historically for bounties, and then when they were protected in New York, Massachusetts, in New Jersey, he would poach them and sell them overseas. So it doesn't take more than one or two people to do it in a given geographic area to have a major impact, because these animals are social hibernators, and they come out in groups together to bask before they disperse across the summer hunting fields. And if you knew where to look, you could, with a snake stick and a sack, come home with 10 or 15 snakes in a day without a problem.
But even today, you write about encountering people who really just hate snakes or are snake phobic. I mean, there were, it sounds like, early periods in our nation's history when the snake had a positive connotation. I guess Ben Franklin had positive feelings in certain ways about rattlesnakes early on. But why did the tide turn? Why do we have, still today, so much animosity toward rattlesnakes?
Well, I think the animosity, it goes beyond rattlesnakes. I think it's for snakes in general. And there's a neurobiologist from the University of California, Davis, named Lynn Irwin, who through the years has done studies on primate brains, and she's identified a place in our brain, as well as lesser primates, called the pulvinar, and that section of the brain gets really agitated and fired up in the presence of snakes. She then made the assumption that it does get fired up because at the dawn of primate evolution, the principal predators on primates were constrictors, and we're talking 60 million years ago. Venomous snakes appeared on the scene perhaps 30 million years ago and presented another obstacle to small-bodied primates or even large primates wandering through tall grasses. She's going on to say that primates have the finest visual acuity of any of the mammalian clan, and we're able to pick patterns out, sort of like finding where's Waldo. We've evolved to be able to look at shapes and patterns in an area, and that enables us to avoid, for the most part, stepping on something you don't want to step on that could bite back.
Now, even you say that you have had this sort of chilling moment of a primordial reaction when you hear the rattle of a rattlesnake, but you do say that when it comes to their character, they're really not ferocious. They're not out to get us. They're kind of predictable and docile. What do you know about the character of the rattlesnake?
Well, I would say from my personal experience is that they're fairly laid back. The only time they move with any rapidity is when they're striking or when they're agitated and they're shaking their tail muscles. Otherwise, in some of the dens I go to watch the snakes emerge in April and May, if you stand perfectly still, they just move right past you. And they haven't been handled by people. They haven't been fondled by biologists and had their scales clipped or have transponders put inside their skin so biologists could meter them. So because they don't get handled, they just treat us like any sort of forest side attraction and just move right past. I've had them glide over my hiking boots.
Is that what you should do if you're out hiking? I mean, we do have them here in Wisconsin, especially along rocks and areas that have bluffs. So if we're to encounter one, what should we do?
Well, first I would freeze. I wouldn't move, and I'd determine where it is. If you heard, well, if you encounter it visually, then you just move around it and give it a berth. But if you hear it, I would stop moving, look around, and it'll keep rattling. It won't just rattle for a second. And once you determine where it is, move in the opposite direction. They can only strike a third of their body length. So you're within striking range if you're within a foot of the snake. And even then, you just stop and quietly back away and then walk around it.
We're talking with Ted Levin right now. He's the author of America's Snake, The Rise and Fall of the Timber Rattlesnake. And they have, in some areas, been killed off to extinction in certain parts of the state. Where is the timber rattlesnake right now in terms of its population health?
Well, where I live in Vermont, they're endangered in Vermont, they're threatened in New York, they're endangered in Massachusetts, they're endangered in New Hampshire, they're extinct in Maine, and very recently extinct in Rhode Island. I think 1970 was the last documented sighting. They're endangered in New Jersey, they're gone from Michigan, gone from Delaware, and the epicenter of their distribution is Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and the mountains of Virginia. I believe they're endangered in Minnesota and Wisconsin, where they're found on the bluffs above the Mississippi River, and maybe just tangentially out into the prairie grassland. But they're a forest rattlesnake. They took a left turn when all other species of rattlesnakes were evolving for life in the desert and life in the prairies. Timber rattlesnakes evolved for life in the deciduous forests.
Now, one thing that might surprise people who are afraid of rattlesnakes and maybe even have that animosity we were talking about, it surprised me to write that research has shown that they are very social animals, that it sounds like they even have close family ties. Can you tell us briefly about that?
Yeah, well, first of all, they're long-lived, which usually comes as a surprise to everyone. There's a biologist named William S. Brown, who has been studying the same populations of timber rattlesnakes in the foothills of the Adirondacks since the Jimmy Carter administration. And he has documented 40-year-old males breeding and 45-year-old females giving birth. Other biologists have done studies of DNA from skin samples of snakes that tend to bunch together when they're moving away from the den and spreading out into the forest. And what he's determined is that these little pods of snakes, which are all about the same size, are all litter mates, so to speak.
And they recognize one another sometimes.
They recognize each other by their odor, not by their sight. They read the world entirely differently than we do. And I don't believe it's a sign of less intelligence. It's, they get just as much information for their survival with their tongue and with their infrared pits as we get with our eyes.
Ted, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me.
Ted Levin is a self-employed nature writer who's worked for the National Audubon Society and the Bronx Zoo. He's the author of the new book, America's Snake, The Rise and Fall of the Timber Rattlesnake. Coming up after the news, two recipe experts share how to whip up great meals from the ordinary ingredients on your kitchen shelf. I'm Veronica Rickard. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.